A lot of people have told me that they take an oral histories. That's not too hard. You have a tape recorder, you have a tape, and you have some time, and you go over to someone's house and you, you know, schlep around after them for a period of a day, and you'll find out a lot of things. You know, sit over numerous cups of coffee, and you can get, you know, I mean, like, everybody who's lived for any reasonable amount of time on this earth has stories. They are story containers. Many people feel they are not storytellers, and I don't necessarily feel that I'm a storyteller, but there is, you know, one kind of thing I do with people's stories, because I'm very fascinated with people's lives, and I'm fascinated by, you know, how you survive, you know, in life, and all of these various methods of living a life. When I work in senior centers, they always tell me, oh, I've never done anything. I'm an ordinary person. You know, you've only been alive for 80 years, and you've raised 5 kids, and you've, you know, through the Depression, and you've seen inventions, and but, you know, they haven't done anything, so they claim. And if you sit down for 20 minutes with them, you find out how much they've done, the extraordinary things that ordinary people do. Oh, good, Catherine's here. I might not have to sing some of my stories. I think what we'll do is maybe give you a bit of information on our schedule, because I've changed the postage schedule around a little bit, because some of my elder hostel friends said that they would be here, and I've had some requests to direct this particular session to oral histories. And so the next time what we'll do is we'll do some group exercises on storytelling techniques and do that. And Holly and I are kind of alternating. So she'll tell you about our schedule.
Is this one of the things people have done? I'm sorry, describe it. Do you have a schedule, or do I need to explain it?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
Passed out a handout yet.
Basically today, as Nikki said, it will be more what was scheduled for Thursday, using examples from her own work. Nikki's going to demonstrate how oral history and documentary material can be turned into dramatic storytelling. What we're going to do is today, that will be from 10:30 till 11:30. Then with each session, we'd like to have a follow-up session, which is like after a meal or after you've had some time to sort of digest the material that we've presented. So our follow-up today will be at 2 o'clock in Chalet number 1. And these are not publicly announced, because we'd like these follow-ups to be people who have participated in the first session. And what we'll do in today's follow-up probably will be to perhaps start some story swapping, or if you're interested perhaps in doing some readings of Nikki's or my material. We just learned this week that there's a regular variety show type performance that goes on Tuesday and Friday nights. And so we thought this might be an appropriate thing if anybody wanted to participate in that, either with their own material or some of the material that we've brought up. We could be preparing this week to do a short performance after Friday night variety show. Okay, so primarily Nikki's going to be leading today's session, and I will be assisting. Tomorrow's session on Wednesday, which is at 4:15 in this room, I'll be focusing a little more on the writing process itself. I have a technique that I call creating memory lists. A lot of you already have stories that you know you want to tell. Others you may feel, as Nikki was saying, that you've lived a long life and many things have happened, but you don't know exactly what to write about or how to go about writing about particular times in your life. Maybe you haven't focused in on a particular incident or a particular technique or way of getting this into some kind of story form. So I'll be going over this memory list technique, and also a couple other what are called pre-writing exercises, brainstorming and mapping, which are ways of sort of getting your ideas together and then arranging them into some kind of form that you will be able to have as a finished written piece that you could then also present on Friday night. On the follow-up for that will be at 8 o'clock, and we'll announce that tomorrow in the session also. On Thursday at 11:40 in this room, Nikki will be doing what we had originally planned for today, and that's some actual exercises, which will be very interactive. We will expect and enjoy the participation of people in the audience. On the Thursday session, we'll be talking about our names and names in general, and doing some actual oral history taking on the spot, on the fly, on Thursday. The follow-up will be after lunch at 2 o'clock. On Friday, again, we'll focus on the writing here. What I have in mind at that point, I believe it's posted up on the board, again, some pre-writing techniques to help you focus in on details and specifics. And then the afternoon session, once again, the follow-up session will be for following up on material that's been presented during the day. Nikki and I will basically make ourselves available to you during these follow-up sessions. So if you've written something you want us to look it over, if you're writing something you're stuck, or if you want to practice telling a story, anything like that, that's what we're available for during the follow-up sessions. And we'll announce each follow-up session during the actual session, so that since that won't be posted up on the board. So once again, today's follow-up will be at 2 o'clock, and it's going to be in Chalet number 1, not in here, but in the Chalet number 1 meeting room over there.
Okay. Let me know if you don't pick up, you know, if I'm...
Holly's hard to hear.
Okay.
Her voice in the basement.
Okay, right.
A little louder.
A little louder. Okay, I'll give it a try.
And you are going to have to be actors in these stories. So when you speak, if you the little trick I have for projecting is I kind of pinpoint a focus, you know, kind of way out there. In a theater, it might be the exit sign, you know, a particular spot. And I just try to aim my voice, and I imagine there's a person standing way back there that I have to communicate with. So I brought some tapes, and I usually have stage managers. I'm a lousy technician, but we'll see how we do on these things. I brought some samples. You know, most people are kind of intimidated by oral history. They feel they have to be very scholarly and so forth, and have to have a lot of academic training, you know, for facts and so forth. But, you know, after all, if you're taking an oral history of your family, it's your family, it's your life, you know, I mean, there are a lot of things you can be as free to play around with these stories as you want. You can put them in the form of a nursery rhyme, of a song, a ditty, jokes. I mean, all of these things are oral histories. So it's not a matter of sitting down and, you know, telling somebody, getting somebody to tell you their life story in this kind of intimidating way. So let me get my list. The first example I have is pretty straightforward. I've used oral history as kind of reportage. When I brought my Women's Peace show, it's a documentary history of the international women's peace movement from World War I up to the present day. And it has all of my pieces use music to a great extent. I brought that to Bryn Mawr College this June for a national conference of the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. And at that time, on the day of my show, I met a young Assyrian-American woman whose name was Pamela Safer, who had come to Bryn Mawr to present a slideshow. She had been part of a WILF-sponsored tour to Iraq, which was led by former Attorney General Ramsey Clark, and she had recently returned. They had gone to undertake to assess the effects of the recent Gulf War on the women and children of Iraq. So Pamela is a fabric artist who lives in Massachusetts. She's not, you know, a professional in any way in this field. In presenting, after she presented her slideshow, I asked her if I could interview her. And what she had to say was so moving that I asked for her permission to put it in my show. I also asked for her permission to edit what she had told me. And I had made the choice to take out much of the factual material, which is, you know, available in many other ways, because I decided to focus on her personal reaction to the emotional impact for her of what she had seen. And then I decided to arrange her words in a kind of free verse format. So here it is. And that night I put it in the show. Mesopotamia, the Tigris and Euphrates, the cradle of civilization. 7,000 years of survival in the desert. When they started bombing, I wore black, couldn't look at colors, and thought I would never laugh again from the inside heart. The whistle of bombs and people screaming, my blood running in the desert. I was enraged. Sometimes I try to erase what I've seen. I put my hand in front of my face to erase it. I cover my eyes sometimes. The babies with skin stretched over tiny bones, mothers crying, flies everywhere. At Amuya, the mother who lost her four children, the young father who lost his children and wife, the grandfather, especially the grandfather. They dropped 88,500 tons of bombs, the equivalent of 7 Hiroshimas. 55,000 children have died as a delayed result of the war. Projected conservative estimates are that 170,000 more will die. Though the Iraqis have withdrawn from Kuwait, sanctions against food and medicine remain in place. This in a country which imports 70% of its food. Women are burying their children. For the Iraqi people, the war has not ended. The war continues. But being there is better than imagining, because I see that life goes on, that no one knows how the Iraqi families survived, but they did, and they will. When I show these slides, I face it over and over again. To be part of a good fight is better than sitting and crying. At one point in my interview, when she mentioned the grandfather, she broke down and couldn't continue. And then after she had collected herself and started up again, she told me how surprised she was that she had done that, that she was completely taken unawares. She'd been showing these slides all day at the conference and on many other occasions. And so it came as a surprise to her that she did this. But I think that telling it in this story form went to a kind of deeper level. I was listening the other day to a tape by June Nielsen, who had come to Holden and given a session on storytelling. She's a Lutheran pastor from Milwaukee. And she said that the spoken word triggers images and feelings from the very depths of who you are. And I think that's what happened to Pamela that day in Bryn Mawr. The second example is using oral history as story and song. I said I'm not much of a singer and I don't have an accompaniment to this, but when I wrote another woman's piece show called Word of Mouth, and we took some newspaper headlines about the Japanese American internment and adapted them into the lyrics of a song. And this is kind of how it goes. During World War I, all Americans of Japanese descent living on the West Coast were removed from their homes and put into prison camps. Executive Order Number 906 deprived them of their rights, although they never had been accused of any crime. 120,000 Japanese Americans. And then it leads into this, which Holly will read.
This is by Jean Wachowski Houston, her book Farewell to Manzanar. We were given 48 hours to clear out. We had already left most of our possessions behind, but Mama brought along her pottery, her silver, tea sets, heirlooms, by Granny's kimonos from Japan, and one fine old set of china, blue and white porcelain, almost translucent. On the day we were leaving, our car was so crammed with boxes and luggage and kids, we just had no more room. Mama had to sell her china. Secondhand dealers had been prowling the neighborhood. One of them offered Mama $15 for her china. But 'tis full setting for 12 and worth at least $200. 15's my top price, said the dealer. Mama started to quiver. She'd been up packing all night and trying to calm down Granny, who just couldn't understand why we were moving and what was the rush all about. Mama's nerves were shot. She didn't say another word. She just glared at this man. He watched for a moment. Then he said, I'm sure I can't give you more than $17.50 for that china. Mama reached into the red velvet case and took out a dinner plate. She hurled it at the floor. Hey, hey, don't do that. Those are valuable dishes. Mama took out another dinner plate and hurled it at the floor, then another and another, never moving, never opening her mouth, just glaring at the dealer as he retreated out the door. When he was gone, she stood there, the tears running down her cheeks, smashing cups and bowls and platters until the whole set lay in blue and white fragments across the wooden floor.
And that's also an example of the use of a literature. This is from a book called Farewell to Manzanar, for a documentary presentation. So now we're going to use some of the tapes that I have from my show, Our Mother's Stories. In 1989, I had the vast privilege and pleasure of writing a show about Washington women. I was commissioned to write a play on Washington State for the centennial, and I decided to do it on pioneer women of color, using actresses from a multicultural cast. So I gathered together Chicana stories, Native American, Caucasian, Asian American, and African-American stories. And I went around the state and I stayed at migrant workers camps, and I stayed with the Macaws up in Nia Bay, and interviewed, you know, people all around. And the show was still on tour. We just did it at Bumbershoot, and it's great fun to do. So the first example I'm using from Our Mother's Stories is using this type of material as myth. I opened the show with a creation, a Native American creation myth that some Native American storytellers helped me put together. And I'm going to have Holly read the girl. We have a little girl narrator that opens the story. She's sitting in a big chair, and she's got this big album called Our Mother's Stories. And as she turns each page, then the various characters from the stories appear on stage. And she's sort of our guide. I mean, she's an innocent, you know, as we are innocents in the knowledge of Washington State. And so she is kind of our tour guide, our in leading us through this journey of the stories of the women of Washington State. And then I will read the myth part, and then what I need is some volunteers to be Raven. If I can find my samples. Okay. So I need four people, and they're just like a few lines. So you want to be number one? And let's see, I only have, I guess you'll have to share it or you'll have to, can you come up? And then you can just pass it down. So why don't we have four volunteers come up? So you can be one. Two, oh, I owe you 50 cents. Uh-oh, she's here. She's come to collect. 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay. So then just kind of pass it down and come center stage. You know, if you're going to be an actor, you have to grab the attention.
Do I get a seat?
Yeah, you can, but maybe we should move over here so that they can come center stage. And then I'll tell you when to start, and then I'll start this music. Okay, so Holly will read, and then I will read, and then we'll say when Raven enters. Okay, we are in the present. A young girl sits with a large album on her lap. It reads our mother's stories.
Once, a long time ago, there was the land and the water. There were no humans yet, but Raven and Coyote, Snake and Whale were already there. Earth Woman was going to send for her people, but then the usurper came, and so first she had to fight him.
They fought underneath the land, and there was a great struggle. There was no way to tell which would win. First they shouted at each other, and the noise was so terrible that the land began to shake. Then they began to wrestle. This made the land rumble so much that mountains from under the seas were pushed up toward the sky. Rivers of fire rushed down the mountaintops. All of this took a long time. How long it was, no one can say. Then there was silence. Earth Woman had won. But so great was Usurper's power that Earth Woman was too weak to move. She lay under the land trying to get back her strength. This also lasted for a very long time. When Usurper fled, he blew the breath of death over the land so that nothing could exist. It became a dead place and very, very cold. While she lay weary from battle, Earth Woman began to cry, and her tears sprang up unto the land. It was so cold that her tears turned to ice, and the ice began to cover everything. This is the way it was for another long time. But Earth Woman's warm heart began to melt the ice, first very slowly, then faster and faster, until there was water everywhere, waterfalls and rivers, oceans and streams. Life returned to the land. When all this happened, Earth Woman sent Raven to fly over everything.
All around, trees, tall evergreens, noble and straight, reaching toward the sky, and everything green. All around, water, shimmering in the sun, glittering under the moon, streams that wave like slender ribbons, wild streams and quiet pools.
All around, animals, otter and seal, seagull and eagle, bear, deer, rabbit and snake, each has its place.
All around, land, products of fire and ice, rock and reef, peninsulas and great valleys, mountains that rise from the mist.
Girl?
Just Native American woman.
Oh, sorry, I missed my cue. This is our place. Some of us live with salt water, travel by canoe, kayak, and are acquainted with salmon and seal. Some of us make our home inland, live with sun and desert, hunt our animals, ride our horses well. This is our place. Under the warmth of Father Sun, under the light of Sister Moon, under the guidance of Mother Earth, she made it all, and it is good. And the girl says,
she made it all, and it is good. When Raven returned from flying over the land, Earth Woman knew the time was right. She sent for her people.
Her people went many ways. Some came here, and we have been here ever since. And then the girl says,
wow.
Well, thank you. Oh, I have to tell you, I have a Lutheran bride in this play. So you'll have to check me out. Let's see. So the next thing is another documentary use of history is through a newspaper article I found in my travels from the Tianaway Bugle. And now that I've torn apart my book, I can't find things. Maybe the girl, Holly will read the girl, and could Catherine do this?
Sure.
I was very interested. I'm interested in origins, and I found out in my research, you can read that, and Holly will do that. But I found out in my research about how many of these women got here, that the men usually came to this territory first to work. Japanese women were brought out as picture brides to marry men who were working on the railroads or in the mines or sawmills. And they were a kind of a matchmaker from Japan would send pictures and so forth. So you get this picture of this woman and she would get a picture of the man. And as often happens in several cases, the men would be laborers. They wouldn't even own a suit of clothes, so they would rent a suit and go to a studio for a photograph. And this poor girl in Japan would say, oh my goodness, rich American, they're over here, there's money growing on the trees, and so I'm gonna go to America and marry this man. And meanwhile, on the other side, maybe this is the old maid of the village that, nobody else in Japan will, she's like 25 years old and she's still unmarried, so we'll send her to America and get these, two people, these two strangers together. And that's how many Japanese American families started here. Also in black women, there was a catalog for black miners were here in the state, and they sent for wives. Many Chicana women came up through the pack mule system. The pack mule system delivered supplies to the miners. And then, of course, as you know, many European women or Caucasian women on other parts of the country, the Mercer girls and so forth, came out here to marry as well and establish families and lives. So, that's very exciting to me, this great adventurousness, and some of the foibles and things that have happened along the way. So this kind of comments on that.
The women of early Washington State came in a variety of ways and for a variety of reasons. Many came as brides seeking new lives, Japanese women as picture brides, and young white women as Mercer girls, who arrived in early Seattle after sailing from the East Coast around the South American continent. Some black women came as catalog brides to marry men working in the mining towns of Franklin, Roslyn, and Reddensdale. And the Robles Chicas were young brides from Mexico, all dreaming, all hoping for a new life.
Advertisement. Tenaway Bugle, January 13th. 1886. After roaming around the world for many years, we, the undersigned old bachelors, have settled down on lovely ranches in the beautiful Tenaway Valley. All we now lack for complete happiness is partners. No capital required. Must be female. Beauty, no object. Address at once to either S.L. Bates, J.B. Stevens, A. Helmer, August Hans, S.L. Taylor, J.H. Moore, or C.M. Giles, care of Postmaster, Tenaway, Washington Territory. Bates, Stevens, Helmer, Hans, Taylor, Moores, Giles, Mrs. S.L. Bates, Mrs. J.B. Stevens, Mrs. A. Helmer, Mrs.
Here. You can be the Lutheran bride. And anybody want to be the picture bride, the Japanese American picture bride? Because this is a song, I'll play the music a little bit, but we don't have time to kind of work on that. We need a picture bride, we need a black catalog bride, we need a mule packer bride. So we need three more people. We can do non-traditional casting and men come kind of.
I was going to say, you don't have to be female.
What bride do you want to be?
I'll be the black catalog.
Okay, good, because now this woman is very resistant. She's kind of a comic, you know, element in this. When everybody else is eager and, you know, she's like, I've come to feed the hogs. I'm living in a tent. Love, honor, and obey, and she goes, you know, and they have to talk her into saying it, okay? So you'll see from the...
Should I come up now?
Yeah, So right after Catherine has come as a Lutheran bride with her traveling suit and her suitcase, and she's going, Mrs. Stevenson, Mrs. Bates, Mrs. Soforth, and then the music starts, da-da-da-da-da, and then I, the Japanese picture bride, says, Yoo-hoo! I am here! Oh, wait, we don't have enough people. We're missing a mule packer bride. We need a Hispanic.
What do we bring?
Okay, so.
So you're the mule packer.
You're the catalog bride, you're the mule packer bride. Okay. You're the Lutheran bride, I'm the picture bride. Okay, yoo-hoo! I am here!
I am here in Yakima. Is that the way?
I am here in Fife.
I am here in Paulsboro.
I am here to be a wife.
I sent my picture to you.
You saw the catalog.
I journeyed on the pack train.
I've come to feed the hogs.
I'm going to a logging town.
I'm going to a place called Kent.
I'm going to Franklin County.
I'm living in a tent.
I hope.
I dream.
I pray.
I scheme.
I want to have your babies.
I wonder if this picture's right.
It's hotter here than Hades.
I hope that he will treat me right.
Oh, here you come.
Oh, here you are.
My, you look so tall.
You don't look like your photograph.
My, you are so small.
It seems that you are shy like me.
You seem to be a gentleman.
I like your smile. I like your teeth.
You seem much older than me.
I hope.
I dream.
I pray.
I scheme.
I want to have your babies.
I wonder if this picture's right.
It's hotter here than Hades.
I hope he will treat me right.
I will.
I shall.
I do.
I do.
I'll love.
I'll honor.
And obey.
Oh, okay.
Yay! Hooray! Fiesta! And then they go and have a fiesta, and then the chicana of catalog of the mule packer bride has a little wedding ceremony. And then we all say adios, good luck, goodbye, and we all go on our respective ways to our respective lives.
I don't think the Lutheran one's quite right.
So, I'm here. Then next, what I've done is I've combined two sets of oral histories. This section is called Our Daily Chores. And so we need, I'd like to have a male voice, although later on it says, in my belly too there is life, but that's all right. Dean, why don't you do this? And then I need two women to alternate lines. So you can take this one. And this is juxtaposing the Native American and her daily chores with the white pioneer women and their daily chores. So can I have two other volunteers? Okay. So, you know, and then one more person, and then just alternate the lines. If you start here, then she starts there. But then Dean will read this, and then you'll read this, and then Dean will read that. And then, yeah. Okay? So,
okay. And who am I?
You're alternate.
Just any other women.
Right.
It begins. January is blizzard season. February, time of white snow.
Monday. Washing.
Then March, first flowers, crocus and buttercup.
If Monday washing is not done, someone you love will die.
April is the green time, leaves still tight in their budding and the rainforests glisten.
Tuesday, ironing. Heat up the cast irons, the stove, and you iron everything now. You hear bedding, trousers, underwear. You just irons everything in sight.
All open up in May, time of high waters, time for all unfolding. June is collecting time of lamish root and mushni, small round root, and wild onion and good eating stock.
Wednesday, mending. Thursday, mending. Hitch up a wagon, drive 33 miles to market, take a list.
In July, my pony and I go up Big Mountain to find berries on the wooden slopes.
Friday, cleaning.
When August comes, I collect cherries and more berries and put them in baskets. I weave with my sisters.
Saturday, baking 22 loaves this week.
Chinook salmon comes to headwaters to spawn.
Sunday's my day of rest. I lay my baby on my breast.
In September we think of winter. Fish for our brother the salmon. In our region he is the most succulent and we are grateful.
Monday washing. Tuesday ironing. Wednesday mending.
No, October now leaves are golden. Wednesday mending. I think of spirits now, and I thank our brothers of the forest, deer, antelope, elk, and bear. I dry your meat for winter survival. I eat, and we are one.
Thursday, spending.
When November comes, it's time for parting.
Friday, cleaning.
We pack to leave for winter's home.
Saturday, baking.
Mother pulls up the teepee sides and buries them in the ground. Till spring, she says.
Sunday is my day of rest. I lay my baby on my breast.
December, the snow is full. Long winter begins.
Monday, washing.
In the forest, the deer embryo begins to form.
Tuesday, ironing. Wednesday, mending. Thursday, spending.
In my belly, too, is life.
Friday, cleaning. Saturday, baking.
We have ended and begun. We are but one.
Sunday is my day of rest. I lay my baby on my breast.
Thank you.